Happy Monday, Cyclone Nation. Welcome to this week's installment of the Iowa Clinic Men's Center Podcast, iamenscenter.com. The health experts will always tell you that breakfast is the most important meal of the day. Well, I think that the Monday morning podcast is the most important podcast of the week. It sets the tone. Rob Gray, what's up?
Not much. How you doing? That's a bold statement. I can't say I disagree with it though.
No, I mean you gotta preview the week. You gotta put a bow on the weekend. I think the Monday morning Iowa Clinic Men's Center podcast is an important one.
It is. It's a tone setter.
Did you listen to the Cyclone Fanatic radio show last Thursday?
Of course I did.
Don't lie to me.
No, I didn't.
Okay. We had Dr. Nicholson from the Iowa Clinic Men's Center.
I'll have to go back.
Yeah, you got
to
go on
the podcast.
Check it out.
I've subscribed to the podcast.
Well, you better. I would hope you would subscribe to your own podcast.
I've left 25 5-star reviews on iTunes too. Maury from New Hampshire is one of them.
Oh yeah, is that like Maury, like the talk show host? Connie Chung's husband, or
yeah,
isn't that her name?
Connie Chung. Yep.
Her husband is Maury, the talk show guy.
Chris, you are the father.
Yes. Those shows were awesome. I used to just litter my brain with that crap when I was growing up. Go back and I would encourage everybody, listen to Doc Nicholson. Talked a little sports with us, hung out with us. Cool dude. He's at the Ankeny Clinic, the Iowa Clinic, iamenscenter.com. Iowa Clinic Men's Center also sponsoring all of our game chats for the 2015 Iowa State basketball season. We had a fun one on Saturday night. What's up, Jay Stansy, old Jared Stansberry? We're going to talk about Iowa State women and their big upset win over Texas. How are you this morning?
I'm good.
Do you find it hard to get here by 8:30?
No.
Don't easy. You can be, dude. I was in your shoes not too long ago.
No, man, I'm able to wake up and get going, get a little breakfast.
You didn't even need coffee. Look at us. Yeah. We got our big.
Well, I asked him if he wanted a cup earlier, and he's like, "Nah, I'm good."
That's not me. I'm not a coffee guy.
At some point, you will be.
I'm going to go back to Ames and get some Burger King breakfast when I get back, though. So,
oh man,
I'll be ready to go.
I would be crapping the rest of the day. It's January 12th, 2015. I'll make a vow to you. You graduate not this May, but next May.
Yeah.
I'll have you on coffee by then.
Okay.
You need to be.
Okay.
Rob, you're a grizzled veteran of this business.
Yes.
You got to do the coffee thing.
Yes, you do.
Coffee, and I know you're not 21 yet, but whiskey, responsibly.
Responsibly. Responsibly, yep.
Yeah. No, I'm serious, though. You will be on the coffee. I started my junior year of college. That's when I started the coffee.
Yeah, I didn't drink. Coffee repulsed me as a youngster.
It's my lifeblood.
Once I started getting into it, now I like the good stuff. I know you're a Maxwell House
guy. Maxwell House, baby.
Both Maxwell House, right? You know, Busch Light the night before, Maxwell House waking up, the best part, right?
I'm a simple man. Can I say? I don't need the fancy stuff.
Got you.
Both of my roommates do drink coffee. They're the only people I've ever met that'll drink coffee at 10 o'clock at night.
Ooh.
And then they'll stay up until 11 o'clock.
My in-laws do that.
2 o'clock in the morning.
Do your roommates drink real coffee or like the girly stuff?
They actually have like a Keurig machine, but it makes like espresso.
Yeah.
And then they'll drink that late at night.
Espresso's strong, man.
Yeah.
I call it the girly stuff.
They're not drinking I guarantee these guys are sitting around drinking like cappuccino at 10 o'clock. I guarantee that's what's going on here, Rob. I'm not an idiot.
Probably even some artificial flavors in there.
I don't want to call them out too much. They don't listen to the podcast, so I don't want to trash on them behind their back.
I will. Jared, he doesn't have the copy vocabulary down. He's saying espresso. What he means is like... it's like a French vanilla latte.
Yeah, something like
I'm
that.
Sure
guaranteed. If they have a Keurig, that's what's going on. They ain't drinking the strong stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
The motor oil that I've got in this Garrison House, Clarinda, Iowa. Thermos. I just belched into the microphone. Excuse me. That's because of all that Maxwell House. All right. Good professional podcast here on a Monday morning. Let's just dig right in. Iowa State goes on the road. Gentlemen, I wasn't surprised that Iowa State won because they're a good team. But based off of the two previous games, I was surprised that Iowa State won. That's as I wrote after the game, I threw together a little half-assed blog about 3 o'clock in the morning. And there aren't many teams in the Big 12 that will win in Morgantown this year.
Agreed.
Was my point. That was the whole point. It was like a 300-word blog, but the whole point was, like, if you're talking a Big 12 championship, which is their – you know, they – Hoiberg doesn't come out and publicly make goals public very often, but this is one I think that we can all read between the tea leaves. This is what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
They want to win the Big 12 championship in the regular season. That's a huge win from that standpoint because, again, there are not many teams that will win in Morgantown this year. That is a stone-cold lock. Iowa State got it done in a gritty, gritty, gritty win.
I'd be surprised if anyone else wins in Morgantown this year, even Kansas.
You think so?
I mean, they got to fill the joint up.
You're right, though, but think about how much the conversation in this league is protect your home court. You know, most teams, most good teams lose once. That's it in your home court.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, just the way that they play, though, that pressure, the trapping, really impressed with Iowa State's defense, especially early on. I mean, West Virginia couldn't get it going. State, and you know, he got his points, but, you know, he didn't shoot a super high percentage. They hit the boards big early. Williams, I think, had 10 boards at half.
Mm-hmm.
Iowa State picked that up in the second half. I mean, they did everything you have to do in those circumstances against a good team. And I think West Virginia's a legit, I think we talked about this last week, top 25 team at least, once it's all said and done, based on what we've seen. We also saw a good South Carolina team that's 0-2 in the SEC, so who knows. But very impressed with the aspects of the Cyclones that, you know, like Hoiberg said in the Oklahoma State game, that's not a game we win last year. I think that's the case with this game at West Virginia as well.
Yeah, I got to the point where I was just exhausted watching the game.
My God.
I mean, that pressure was intense.
It just kind of just drug on. It felt like so much was happening in the game that it was just a long game, a long mentally tasking game.
Well, yeah, and guys, the most impressive part, I think, would be if you consider Monte Morris is fouled out, Dustin Hogue is fouled out. Not even that they fouled out, but that those guys were in foul trouble the entire game, and they somehow – and that's where, Rob, I think to your point where maybe they don't win this game last year, they don't because they don't have an Abdul Nader. And listen, did you guys read Kirk Howland's preview to the game, the encyclopedia one early in the week? I mean, statistical numbers showing that Abdul Nader, other than that Iowa game, is killing them when he's on the court. The plus, minus, all that stuff. I mean, it wasn't anything personal against Abdul.
Yeah.
Kirk showed the numbers.
Yeah, he'd really struggle.
Yeah.
Turning the ball over.
And this is a guy in the two true row games for Iowa State has potentially been their best player.
Yeah.
And they didn't have that last year, and they needed his toughness, they needed his rebounding, they needed all that stuff on Saturday, and that's why this team's so much better, is because, you know, they can go that deep, and it's good depth. It's not just depth that we talk about. It's actual proven depth. And man, Nader, what can you say about him though? Because he really hasn't been very good.
Yeah, the weird thing about Nader is it's almost like when he plays in Hilton, he almost looks like he's pressing really bad, and he's just and then he's almost just a step slow, and it's like he wants to impress everyone in front of the home crowd at Hilton, and then he goes off on the road and the exact opposite of how almost every other player is.
He's just loose.
He's just loose, and he just goes out and plays, and he just plays his game. And I mean, he was awesome the other night, knocking down shots and getting to the rim, being able to finish, it was definitely as good as we've seen him play.
He was totally on. I mean, even the shots he missed, I think one or two threes were just barely in and out. I mean, he just lights out in every category. And one thing that I've been impressed with is the way he assists the ball when he's in the game. He didn't do that at Northern Illinois. He obviously played more minutes, scored, I think, about double what he's scoring now. But he's assisting at a rate that is – and, you know, that plays into the – you know, that's part of the system. You know, you want X number of assists for made field goals, and Cyclones generally find that. But he's just, you know, he's bought in, and I agree with the pressing aspect at home. I think he really does want to make an impression. Part of that, though, was also based on the rotation. I mean, he knew where he was coming in off the bench, and you gotta find your minutes, and he's doing that on the road right now.
A shout out to Cyclone Yoda, I believe. On the board, he came up with this stat earlier today. It's not really a stat, but more of a fact, that West Virginia has given up 40 points in one half only once this season, and that was Iowa State on Saturday when the Cyclones scored 42 in the second half. What's intriguing to me, the most intriguing part of this basketball team to me, is something Fran Fraschilla said after the game was done, And he said, I don't think Iowa State's playing its best basketball yet, essentially is what it, paraphrasing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're all going up to Fred Hoiberg's press conference later on today. That's something I want to ask Fred about. Like, where can you get better? I'll tell you one part is they really – this team really needed Clayton Custer to be able to give them some minutes. Clearly, he's not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
For one reason or another. The mono or he doesn't have the experience at this point. Throwing him to the Wolves in West Virginia was not the – right move, obviously. But you can the difference between Monte Morris and not Monte Morris on that team, especially against that pressure, was incredible. Having said that, though, can you really – I like to look at things as, yeah, things are great right now for Iowa State, but how do you get better? Mm-hmm. You know, instead of just sitting here dwelling on how good they are, how do you get better? The presence of a backup point guard would be great, but in the same – like Monte Morris is a – I don't want to go too far, but is he an elite basketball player right now? I think he's an elite point guard.
He's definitely a top five point guard.
Yeah, he's an elite point guard mm-hmm. in college basketball. So if you take those five guys, whoever you want, take Marcus Page, for instance.
Yeah. I'd take Monte Morris over Marcus Page right now. He just does – I mean, Marcus Page is just more of a scoring guy that – he does what he has to do for his team, and then – Monte does what he has to do for his, and I think what Monte does outweighs what Marcus Page does for his.
Okay, so let me ask you guys this. So let's just take the top five point guards in the country. Whoever you have in your mind, anybody, there's no wrong answer. Take that guy away from that team. It's a pretty big drop-off. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, so should we be surprised if Monte goes out that they're going to struggle a little bit? No, because he's that damn good.
Yeah.
He is, and – But I would like to see I don't trust Naz with the ball in his hands in that point guard spot. I just don't. I think he's a nice player. I think he's going to do a lot of good. It's not a critique of him. It's not his role.
Yeah.
I wish that Custer would be able to give them 10 minutes if need be. I don't think he can, though.
Yeah.
Not yet.
He's just looked so overwhelmed every time that he's been on the floor. It just seems like he's still – the game hasn't slowed down enough for him yet to where he could play at a Big 12
level. And that's where that mono thing probably is really impacting him at this point.
Yeah, his...
Because he... That first... I'm thinking back to Matt Thomas's first year, and Matt would always talk about, he just... It took him so long to just get acquainted with it. Well, hell, Custer didn't even have the first mm-hmm. 30 days of practice under his belt.
True.
So... I don't want to dwell on that, but I do think anybody who watched the game and you're being critical and you go, how can this team get better? That's clearly a route to go.
Yeah, and I don't know if it becomes a little bit more of George playing point forward, a la Royce.
Yeah.
I know he does that a little
bit. And he does it well.
Anyway, and he does do it well. But, yeah, Monte is – I couldn't name a better – of course, the assist turnover ratio speaks for itself. That leads the nation, led the nation last year. What record last year? And as Jared mentioned, Page's role is much more of a scorer. But you look at top teams. I just to your point, Chris, the importance of him on the court. I don't know if it's quite as pronounced in games where they're moving, where you're not facing that type of pressure. Mm-hmm. But in that game, in that environment, against the way West Virginia plays, led the nation in steals coming into the game, probably still does. It was a marked difference. And pointed to, how impressive the win was, too, with them shuffling in and out with the foul trouble.
We, we're watching Iowa State go 2-0 in the Big 12. They're 12-2 overall. I think when the rankings come out later today, 11th?
Yeah, I could see it.
Because there are a lot of teams lost in front of them.
Yeah.
I bet they're a 10th, 11th, or 12th.
I think it depends on where Duke and Wisconsin move to. If they move, it just depends on how far they're going to drop them, I think.
Louisville lost.
Yeah.
Oklahoma lost.
West
Virginia lost.
Texas
lost.
They could make a huge jump. They made a little bit of a bigger drop than I thought they would after South Carolina.
Yeah.
From 9 to 17. But I don't think they'd jump up to 9. I guess I'm thinking more in the 12 range.
West Virginia,
that's
a statement win, though.
Yeah.
And I'm saying they'll jump just based off of more everybody else losing. Yeah. But point is, we're watching a pretty special thing develop right here. And I don't think that Bryce DeJean-Jones is playing anywhere near he's capable of.
No. Something's very much amiss. And, in fact, I was mentioning to Adam Gray, one of your great cohorts on the Cyclone Fanatic podcast.
Director of sales, if you want to advertise with the top fan site in America, the number one ranked podcast on iTunes, get a hold of Adam.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Fan. And I was
trying to make money here.
Chatting with him, and Bryce lately sort of reminds me of the way Nader was playing. There's a hesitance when he does make a move. It just doesn't seem to work out. He's had how many – just it looks like he's going to finish at the rim and it, you know, dribbles off the side, or some guy gets in and rakes the ball away as he's making his move. Three-point shots, either just a, you know, a little bit off in his rhythm. I mean, I think he'll refine it. I mean, I don't think he's a different guy than he was early in the season, where he was so explosive, so fluid, mm-hmm. a guy that you could count on. It looked like it was Niang and Bryce DeJean-Jones, and those were your two scorers. Those mm-hmm. are guys going to have to carry you in the tough times. But he's just going through one of those stretches. As Fred has said, the last couple games, I know it's gotten up to five straight games where he really hasn't produced a ton. But I think he'll get back there.
He also, I think he leads the team in I Want to Punch You Face. I mean, he just looks angry all the time.
Yeah.
And he looks like he just wants to beat everybody up all the time.
Barring his history. I mean. He's an intense guy.
Yeah.
And I actually like that, though. I think that – because that's what DeAndre Kane brought. Yep. And from that standpoint, I think that Bryce can kind of fill that gap. Not because Edgem was like that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Edgem and – Kane were the enforcers last year. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to mess with either one of those guys down the stretch. And that's the one thing I think DeJean-Jones, no matter what, if he's not making shots, if he can always bring that.
Yeah.
And the rebounding, I mean, we saw him get a couple of big boards on Saturday. And then what can you say about Dustin Hogue, who I keep quoting Fran Fraschilla, but I think we all love Fran Fraschilla and respect his opinions. And during that broadcast, he called him the most underrated player in the Big 12, didn't he? Or underappreciated player in the Big 12.
Yeah, or something like that.
It was something like that. But, yeah, I mean, you look at Hogue's numbers now. His rebound numbers are climbing a little bit. He's up to 4.9 per. And Dustin's averaging 11.7. Let's talk about Jameel McKay now. He's averaging 6 boards a game. Guys, look at this, though. DeJean Jones is still the top rebounder on this team right now.
Yeah.
At 6.1 per game.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, no, McKay is just, like, on a whole nother level. Like, he's
– yeah.
Like, it's weird that he's only played 5 games.
Yeah.
He doesn't look like a guy who's knocking off the rust right now.
Yeah. He, I mean, at times, in terms of how he flowed into the lineup and in terms of how he integrated into it and you know, played off his teammates and they consequently played off him, you could see some struggles early on as far as that went, you know, acclimating, you know. But, yeah, his performance is off the charts. He's becoming a guy that can actually, even on the offensive end, put the team on his back for a couple minutes, whether it be an offensive board put back, whether it be a dunk. You know, he's got better moves in the paint than I thought he did. I mean, it looks like he can pretty much make a move on anybody. And a quick, you know, not a little drop step, but a spin, and then to the rim. It seems like his quickness is pretty elite down there.
We haven't talked about defense. But McKay, keep in mind, he's only played 5 games. 12 blocks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
12 blocks in 5 games.
Yeah.
That's better than I thought. We heard about the rim protector thing. Fred talked about it ad nauseum in the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
But I always was kind of hearing in the background, he's a good shot blocker, but he's not like an elite one. I don't know if I call him an elite one right now. But he's clearly changed it, though, Jared. I mean,
yeah, but
he played
I mean,
that position. He's changed the way you got to play against Iowa State.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. By no means is he Anthony Davis
in
the middle of the lane. But just having that guy that's 6'9 with a 7-foot wingspan, if you drive into the lane and you see him standing there with his arms in the air, you don't want to shoot over that if you're a 6'1 guard. I mean, you don't want to deal with that. It just changes the whole way that Iowa State can play defense. It allows their guards to gamble a little bit more, try and force some more turnovers, and then bring a little bit more pressure. If you just have that pressure relief back there by the rim just to protect you all the time.
And he he's making some of those plays too, where that 7-4 wingspan that we've talked a lot about. There was a play in West Virginia. It was one of those lobs to him where he threw it down. There's no one else on the team who can make that play, and it's not even close. You know, and I think that you're going to see a lot of that this year with its tip dunk stuff like that. You remember how I've used this a lot, but remember how many points Rob Jackson Vroman used to get off of tips?
Ooh.
You remember that? Like, that was half of his offense. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to start seeing more and more of that from McKay as he learns, you know, you learn how your teammates' balls that sounded bad. You learn how your teammates' ball comes off the rim.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Stuff. I think that he's going to improve in that category. But watching him, I tell you what, the most impressive thing to me about Jameel McKay is watching him on a fast break.
Yeah.
How fast he is. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. He just shoots
out of a
cannon.
He's like a deer out there.
He shoots out of a cannon running when he rim runs. He gets from one end of the floor to the other. He's the first person down the floor every single time.
I totally see how Fred says I can only play him in 5-minute spans because he's so gassed.
Yeah.
And it's not that he's out of shape. He's going nuts.
That's not a bad thing, though.
No.
The way he plays, if he's going to play like that for coming and play for 5 minutes, then he can make as big an impact as somebody that plays for 10.
Yeah, he's doing exactly what he is asked of him and asked of everyone, because Fred has said on more than one occasion, I think, with the depth that they have, he wants guys to be able to play to the point of exhaustion and then come out. You know, they can give it everything they have, recover, come back out, whereas before they probably had to conserve a little bit.
Good stuff, boys. Let's move on. We talked a lot about West Virginia and Iowa State's win on Saturday night. Up next is the Baylor Bears. We don't need to get too in depth because I think there's a lot of post weekend stuff we can still talk about. But I do want to touch on Baylor. That's coming up on Wednesday night, 8:00. Bloom and I, Brent Bloom's coming over tonight, Monday night. We're going to record a podcast for Tuesday. We'll hit more on Baylor. We're going to hit on all the issues with Iowa State football right now. We're not ignoring that. The point of this podcast is just kind of to recap the basketball weekend, which we intend on doing here for the next 20 minutes or so. Bloom and I will go in depth on Baylor, but this is, I think, you know, the West Virginia and Baylor, probably the two biggest surprises in the Big 12. I think Oklahoma State's in that category now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was a statement when they made over Texas. They're here. They're for real.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tournament team, I think. I still think they're really limited because if you shut one of those guys down, mm-hmm. Nash or
Forte.
But the thing, how do you stop Forte? Like, I mean, the shots that guy hits, I mean, he's not open.
Well, on the multiple screens on that, I mean, as Fred alluded to and the guys alluded to, I mean, you're going to exhaust whoever's defending him over and over and over and over again. They're so creative in how they get him the ball. I don't know how you stop. You can limit him. If you have a team that's got a ton of length and a tall guard, you can get out. And if he can get off those screens, probably block a couple of his shots, get in his head a little bit. But, yeah, he's going to get his. Nash, I don't see how he doesn't either. I think they're – we were talking last week. What do we think they could be, 4-9 or something, whatever it was?
I mean, that game in Stillwater for Iowa State looks a lot tougher than it did a week ago even.
Yeah.
I mean, that looks like a really, really tough game.
I think that's a legit upper division team now. I mean, they're going to be those teams in that 4-6 range, even 4-7 range. It's going to be in and out. Now Kansas State's 2-1 in the league.
I tried telling the guys on the Friday podcast, like, you can't – Kansas State's been a disaster so far, no question. We talked about it last week here on Monday. But, like, if Foster's playing like the 20-point per game Marcus Foster, that team can beat anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed it on Saturday going into to the hottest team in the Big 12. I think going into the weekend, if you were to do a power ranking on, like, just straight conference resume so far, that they're number one. And Marcus Foster just took over.
Yeah.
So, like, how many games – if they're playing like that, how many games does Kansas State lose at Bromwich?
Zero.
Yeah. I mean, seriously.
If they're playing like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, you don't know. You can't trust – you can't trust them at this point,
no.
But I mean, it's more strength of this league.
Yeah.
Cause I mean, that was I guess I wasn't shocked because I probably have a little more faith in Kansas State than most, but, if you just were to stack up like resumes going into the weekend, that was a shocker.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was a total stunner. Well, Baylor has lost to Kansas by a point game. They probably should have won in their mind. If you're a Baylor Bear.
Yep.
And then they defeated TCU over the weekend. Nice win over TCU at that like high school arena that TCU's playing in right now. Yeah. That's going to come to their advantage a couple times this year. Yeah, TCU's, playing in that little arena.
TCU is still much improved. Yeah. I know they haven't won. They took Baylor was an overtime game, I think.
Yeah.
I know they were in some games last year too when they were losing virtually all of them, but they'll get theirs. I mean, they'll have their big shockers and probably beat a few of the other teams. I think they might have Texas Tech. You know, one of those teams gets off the schneid coming up here shortly. But, I think we're just going to see more of the same, those head-scratching games where the hot team meets a team that's struggling, and that team that's struggling is actually pretty good, finds a way to beat that hot team by 12. No, but regardless of where it's at, you know, you just kind of look at it and go, whoa, how'd that happen?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you watch Baylor much, Jared?
I have a little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah.
They're to me – and again, I don't want to get too X's and O's into this, but they look a lot like the Baylor teams of the past. I mean, to put like if you've seen Baylor the last 5 years, this is what you're getting. Probably a little less talent.
Yeah.
Gathers
not as much skilled length.
Yeah. You know, they're bulkier.
Yeah.
Than they are long this year, but they still are. They've got a ton of athletes. Kenny Cherry has the ability. I don't think he's got the Pierre Jackson type ability, but he's a good player.
Yep.
Gathers is a total beast. Down low, and then they've got a bunch of just roll guys who do their thing. But it's still a scary game going into Wednesday. But I like Iowa State. I didn't like Iowa State going into West Virginia. I've always liked them in this game because as much as I do love Scott Drew, and I love Scott Drew, and I'll tell you all about it. But I mean, Iowa State's more talented, and you got Hoiberg versus Drew.
And the zone, I mean.
But Waco doesn't scare me.
No.
Waco doesn't bother me at all. West Virginia is a way tougher place to play.
Yeah, definitely.
The only thing you got to worry about with Iowa State is a hangover or a look ahead to Kansas. But these guys don't do that very often. Usually, like, if they're going to lose because of that, it's just because they're all just lulled to sleep.
Yeah.
And that's what happened against, I thought Maryland beat Iowa State. And clearly, if you look at their resume, they're legit.
Yeah, they're a good team.
South Carolina, I mean, Iowa State, like, that was a game where I think if those two teams played 10 times, Iowa State would win 8.
Yeah.
Even though that's probably a tournament team in the SEC.
Could be.
I think they're right on the bubble.
Yeah, they got to right the ship. They went promptly into league play and got beat twice. But Ole Miss is decent. I think they're kind of legit, actually.
Yeah, Ole Miss. Took
Kentucky.
They almost beat Kentucky.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, whatever. I mean, point is, let's guess the point spread on Wednesday. I would guess it's right around a pick'em. I mean, because Kansas was a 3-point underdog going into Waco. Iowa State was, a 5-point underdog going into West Virginia.
Yep.
I'm going to guess it's, I don't know, maybe Iowa State's a 1-point underdog, pick'em, right in there.
Yeah, I was thinking 2. Yeah,
two
but
point
I
underdog.
Agree with the pick'em, maybe Baylor's favored by 2 or something. I mean, I know different home courts produce different. You know, I don't know how.
Yeah, Waco is weird. Waco's kind of they don't have a ton of fans there normally.
Yep.
But that doesn't always – sometimes that works in their advantage. Because Iowa State thrives off of the atmosphere they saw in West Virginia. I don't know if they thrive off of this or not.
Yeah.
But they're going to get there.
I think the key, and I agree with you that they're going to go and win this game, is Baylor – you know, Baylor's zone is – good against most teams. Iowa State recently, most of the time, has struggled from 3. If they can get it going, which I think they will, a little bit from out there, if Scott Drew has to draw up some new, go back to the drawing board a little bit, could be one of those get out to a big lead, Baylor pops back with guys like, O'Neal, somebody coming out of nowhere and, getting on a run for the Bears. I just kind of like him to really shoot the ball well on Wednesday. And if they can do that, then Baylor's scrambling a little bit. You know, be kind of like the opposite of what happened in the Big 12 Tournament Championship game last year where Baylor should have got out to a bigger lead when Iowa State couldn't make a basket at all. And, we'll see. But I kind of like him to be able to pierce that zone early and often.
This is a Naz Long game, boys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bryce DeJohn-Jones.
Naz hasn't been in double figures since he went off against – Mississippi Valley State, when he went 7-for-10 from three-point range on New Year's Eve. So he's had 7, 7, and 3 his last 3 games. that zone. It's a Naz Long game.
Yeah.
This could be one when Matt Thomas could come in and hit a couple threes, too.
I mean, don't you, though, X's and O's, Y's, Jared, those two are integral, right?
Yeah.
Against Baylor?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I mean,
one of them has to be in the lineup at all times.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, if they want to – I mean, Baylor would be completely content to just pack it in and say, you guys aren't making threes anyway. Try and come
in here.
And
they're not.
Yeah. Yep. Come in here and try and shoot over our length that we've got in the middle.
Just what they did to Kansas.
Right.
Similar game plan.
Right. So
I'm not convinced this is a great three-point shooting team. Iowa State.
No, I would agree.
Because I think Monte, with his 41% as a freshman, that was a bit of a farce. I don't think he'll ever do that again.
I don't think he'll need to. I mean, Monte isn't required to shoot a very good three-point percentage. You just need him to shoot one respectable enough to where if he's left open, he'll knock it down.
And which he is.
Yeah.
Does that well.
But you don't need him to be a guy that's knocking down contested threes.
He was a 41% three-point shooter as a freshman. Right now, he's at 29.
Yeah.
I mean, so let's go down the roster, though. Dejon Jones is not a good three-point shooter.
No.
Let me find his number here.
I'm gonna call a good game from him from out there at Baylor. I'm just gonna go ahead and.
Bryce?
Yeah. I think
you got a feeling?
Yeah, I think he's going to find his rhythm again a little bit.
He's 33% from three-point range right now.
He's one of those guys that I think if he knocks down one or two, all of a sudden it turns into four or five. Mm. You know, he's just that guy that gets a good feel, and all of a sudden the rim goes from looking like it
thimble.
Does. Yeah, to look from like a thimble to being about the size of the ocean for him.
Yeah.
Let's look at George Niang's numbers right now. Updated. I'm just thinking he's at 33% from three-point range right now too. 15 for 45. I think it's a good, like, against stack them up against everybody else. I think they're good three-point shooting. This is not a great three-point shooting team though.
Yeah.
Even Naz, like, I don't have the confidence in him that I did like a Tyrus McGee.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Tyrus could make it. I mean, falling away, he could make it coming to a dead stop. I mean, what did he shoot that year? Almost 48%.
Yeah.
He was.
And they were hard.
A truly elite three-point shooter. I don't think there's one of those guys on this team, and, you know, unless Matt Thomas gets it going in spurts, and it's kind of hard to do off the bench, obviously, to keep your percentage that high just because it, you know.
But those teams didn't defend like this group does.
No.
So, like, we're critiquing the three-point shooting, but there's a lot of things that this team does a lot better than those previous teams.
I think
did.
It was already a better defensive team than the previous years, and then McKay comes in, and that changes it even more.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right, we're at 33 minutes. I don't want to go past, like, 45 or anything today because we got to get up to Ames. We got to get to work, boys. Jared, man, you covered a great game on Saturday.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
You know, Iowa State was taking on number 3 Texas. I think I texted you early in the week ago. This is not going to be pretty, is it, man?
Yeah, we were talking about it on Friday, and you said this isn't going to be a good thing.
I was a little concerned, you know, with the Finley 20-year celebration. I really wanted them to have a great showing. Number 3 comes to town. Big, tall Texas team, right?
Oh, yeah, they're huge. They've got a girl that was 6'7", 6'5", 6'5".
And really, though, I'm more of an outsider. I've watched as many women's games as I can this year. But that was a horrible matchup for Iowa State because Iowa State doesn't have experienced bigs. They've got a pretty decent little backcourt. But you take Jada Buckley out, who might be your best player, maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's up for debate. But then you're throwing all your young bigs at this Texas team. That's an incredible upset.
Yeah.
If there's a point spread on that one, Iowa State's probably like a 17, 18-point dog going into that game, right?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, Brianna Fernstrom played – as well defensively as she has played all season long, and probably just better. I mean, and Fallon Ellis, she was in their guard in the 6'7" girl, McGee Stafford. I mean, that girl was an All-American, and she didn't even score.
Fallon's just up,
yeah,
huh?
Fallon's just has been awesome in the last couple games,
honestly. She got a lot of pub after the Kansas State game, but she may be the unsung hero, though.
Yeah,
I
would say so, yeah. I mean, it was just a game in which Iowa State had the perfect game plan from the beginning. I mean, the posts and the tall players for Texas never got going. It was players like they had Sanders. She made 3 threes right off the bat. They had Nakia Jones came in for Texas, and she started like 5 of 5 in the first half, and she averages like 6 points a game.
Mm-hmm.
So there was girls that just stepped up for Texas And at halftime, you kind of thought, if Iowa State can get a couple stops and if they can keep these – keep the, like, NECA – I can't say her last name – Inkpali, she's their leading scorer. If they can keep them playing the way they are right now, Iowa State's going to have a chance. And if they can just start to knock down some shots. And then Nikki Moody started to play in another world in the second half and just took over.
You mentioned Moody. Rob, you covered women's basketball at Iowa State for a long time. Isn't it funny how with these Finley teams, we're always watching these great point guards graduate, and then you're kind of like, okay, where's the next one? You know, did they have another one in the mix? Like, where's this? And now, like, Nikki Moody's become that.
Yeah.
She's
– yeah.
Especially with the adversity early in the year, she – I don't know. Damn near got kicked off the team from what I understand. I mean, like, they suspended her for the exhibitions.
Yep.
And now look at her. Like, she's leading them to upset wins. And I don't want to overreact. I don't think that this is a reason to just go nuts. They still did just blow a 24-point lead to TCU.
Yeah.
It was a great day on Saturday. I think this solidifies Iowa State as a tournament team. But Nikki Moody, though, like, she all of a sudden, she's there.
Yeah, yeah. She's been there at times throughout
her career. She's always had the talent.
Yep. She's finishing better than she has in the past. Her composure seems to be better than it has been in the past. But what struck me about that game, and I wasn't able to tune in until about halftime, it's the second half. Once they hit, I can't remember who hit the first three. I don't know if it was Blaskowski or if Moody hit one. Moody hit a couple nice
Moody hit
long twos.
Moody hit a step back three.
That's right. And it's like that team play. I mean, you know, Finley, I remember him saying, he probably said it post-game, but on the post-game radio show too, that all those players coming out to halftime, you know, I think early second half, it might have been the under 16.
Yeah, it was right at the under 16. It was like kind of just when Iowa State was – getting some stops defensively. They were starting to knock down some shots, and then they had the ceremony announcing all the players. And then it was like Iowa State just hit another gear, and they just were like, they wanted to impress the former players, and that's when they finally got the lead there with probably about 10 minutes to go.
Hmm.
I know football and men's basketball obviously command the most attention, but as I watched that game unfold, and I watched them hold on as they didn't score for over 8 minutes and still win that game, that's one of the top five wins I've seen for sure from Iowa State in many, many years, just because of – people made the point on Twitter, I think it was Alex Gukin at the Iowa State Daily, and I've made the point many people have before, but the fact that elite – in the women's game, elite teams just don't lose to other teams.
Right.
They just don't.
No.
If you're top four, top five, you'll lose to other top four, top five teams. Yes, occasionally there's this crazy game here and there, but unranked teams, virtually unheard of. Iowa State, with Hilton the way that it is, and with the emotional charge that was in that building the way that it was, celebrating what Finley's done. He'll tell the stories about what 38 people showed up as he was coming in. Wrap that around the fact that they beat a number three team. That, look, we've seen good Iowa State teams go into tournaments and end up having to face a top four Stanford or something in the second round, and they lose by 30, 35 points. I mean, so that's the elite good mismatch frequently in the women's game, and Iowa State overcame that and overcame so much, like the scoring dearth late, and it was really a monumental win just for Iowa State in general, I think.
It kind of reminded me of when Iowa State beat, Jared, this way before your time, but you may have covered this game, Rob. I think you were at the Gazette then. But you remember when Griner came in as a freshman, Brittany Griner's Baylor team?
Hmm.
I don't know. I think they. I don't know if they won a national championship that year. But when Iowa State beat that team,
yeah.
I don't think that they did either. But Anna Prinz, you know, that was a kind of a landmark type game, I thought, but it didn't compare to this. Didn't compare to this when you factor in the youth that Jared was talking about.
And the previous game.
And Buckley being.
Second half points. And Buckley,
Being out. I mean, that's huge. She's their second ball handler, and I think she's not their best player.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's got the potential
close,
to be.
Yeah.
She's been their potentially best player, I think, since lacing up for the first time.
Yeah.
And she's been growing as far as that goes. But, yeah, all those elements, like you said, Chris, I mean, that's – it's staggering.
So they have Baylor Tuesday.
Yeah.
What's Baylor's deal this year, Jared? I mean, we just know Baylor.
I mean, they're just as good as they've always been. They're number five too. So I mean, they're going to be Baylor is Baylor, I guess.
Yeah.
Taking from the men's saying taking it over to the women's.
Is that game on TV? Do we know?
No, it is not.
It's not on TV.
No.
Okay. Well, we'll keep an eye on it. I'm glad they won though, because I had a sour taste. I think everybody had a sour taste in their mouth after that TCU game.
You're like,
man, this could go south in a hurry.
Yeah.
But you know, it's Finley though. You know that he wasn't gonna the wheels weren't gonna fall off.
Hilton,
but that was an impressive.
Hilton was as loud on Saturdays. It was louder than I've heard it from men's games.
I'm curious, Jared. So when I came to you this summer and said, I think I have a really – you told me you wanted to write more.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I think I have a really nice opportunity for you. Because I was kind of – I had this like – I knew we were hiring Rob at the time. And I had this like vision in my head of what I wanted CF to be.
Yeah.
And Ian Smith has done great work for us for years. But he has another job. So he can't day-to-day cover the team like we want.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, what would you think about covering women's basketball? What did you think it was then, and what do you think it is now? I'm just curious.
Well, I'd covered them a little bit.
You had an idea.
Last year. So I had a little bit of an idea of what it was going to be like. But it's fun, man. That whole program is just fun.
I tell people all the time, I wish I could just make a living of covering women's basketball. Because it is a blast.
Yeah. And there's no pressure to it. I mean, you get to go, and you walk right in, and Fennelly is as good as any coach can be, I feel like, to the media.
He is, and it's fascinating to watch him.
Yeah.
Watch him. He is brilliant.
Yeah.
Like, I love watching him coach, I think, more than anybody I've ever seen. He is brilliant. It's a pleasure. You're doing a good job, man.
Thank you.
Having fun with it.
Nobody knows who I am, as we learned from our game chat the other night.
Oh, that was just a couple of hacks. That was ISU Cubs win. You're fine. No, those guys were just messing with you.
It's okay. You had my back, though.
Yeah,
you called that guy out real quick.
Yeah, well, that's what I do. That's what I do. Okay, so game day's coming to town on Saturday. Rob, Jared and I are getting up we're going to go get coffee. Well, I'm going to get coffee at 5 a.m. And I'm gonna escort Jay Billis from his hotel to Hilton Coliseum.
Do you have a motorcycle or something?
I tell you what, if I can meet Jay Billis, that'll make my life. So if we need to make that happen,
make my life.
You'll meet him.
I remember I took Van Winkle to the NCAA tournament a couple years ago, and he met Jim Nantz, and like he just was. This is the one in Dayton. Van Winkle was just on cloud nine.
Jay Billis is like my favorite guy on TV. And
I like him too.
He tweeted out that
he's
video
kind of a
last
dick,
year
but
that
I like
I had,
him.
But
yeah, he comes off as like really arrogant, but he's brilliant though.
Yeah. He knows his stuff. He just knows basketball. That's what I like about him.
Oh yeah. He's a basketball gurus. Love that guy.
Yep.
No question.
Do Billis' people know that you're going to be escorting him?
To We're going to be stalking him.
There you go.
He had bagels for breakfast. No, what I think I'm going to do, I think Jared and I are going to take the video camera around and interview Fanatics.
Yeah.
So if you're a Fanatic listening to this and you'd like to be interviewed, shoot me an email or something, or a PM or anything.
Make sure you haven't had too many Bush Lights before we come interview you, though.
No, you know what, Jared? I'm going to disagree with you. More
All
than
right,
Mary.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
This isn't TV. We don't got to worry about the FCC. I'm just kidding. We actually had a Fanatic on our radio show. Yeah, we used to do this thing when we were doing the show up at Buffalo Wild Wings in Ames. We did it on Thursdays. And we did, like, trivia or giveaways or something, and this drunk kid, I should have known better, I put him on the air.
Did you have a delay?
Luckily it was only the S word.
Okay.
So it wasn't an F bomb or anything like that, but that was a disgrace. So before you guys came, I was looking for things to talk about, and I wanted to hit on Big Monday tonight in the Big 12 game, and then I realized the national championships tonight.
Mm-hmm.
So we may as well. I don't know what the point spread is. Do you guys? Do you know what the line is on that?
I don't know what the line is.
Man, I'm so cashed out on football. I'll figure out the line. But what do you guys think? We don't need to get too in-depth here, but anybody have a I'll tell you my gut feeling. I don't know the line. I have not seen the line. I have a weird feeling that Ohio State's going to win. Wow.
I'm ready to go.
Wow, look at Jared.
I've got my shirt on.
Jared has an Oregon Ducks shirt on.
I do. My dad is from Oregon. So
you actually have a legit reason.
Yeah, we are. I guess you could say we are Duck. Well, you got your family.
Your boy Scott Frost.
Yep, Scott Frost.
Jared grew up a Nebraska fan, so the Frost thing is like a big deal to you.
Yeah.
He's like a king over there.
Yeah, he is. Well, now he didn't used to be, but yeah, now he.
What did he?
Nebraska,
what do you mean he didn't used to be?
Well, he went to Stanford out of high school, and then everybody hated him in Nebraska. So when he came back, and lost his first game as a starter, and that was after they'd won two national championships.
I love those old Nebraska quarterbacks like Jamal Lord.
A
lot of those guys.
I wanted to be Jamal Lord when I was in the fourth grade. And I'm not scared to admit
it. Zach Day? Wasn't that his name?
Zach Daly. I thought Zach Daly was the second coming of Eric Crouch. And then he threw 30 interceptions in his first year.
My head's about
Callahan.
To explode, all this Big Red talk. Yeah. I can tell you this, Scott Frost was a pleasure to cover. He made a short stop at UNI.
Yes, he did.
As an assistant coach and good guy.
Scott Frost,
boom,
parents.
You knew he was going to go up big time.
Everybody said he was coming in with Jim Tressel to be the new coach at Nebraska. Mm. They're going to be the co-head coaches at Nebraska.
I remember you told me that because when Pointy got canned, I texted Jared. And I was like, dude, Scott Frost, right? It's got to be.
Yeah.
He's like, no, the hoodie. I'm like, well.
I like
cheater.
I like Oregon tonight. Yeah. I think Ohio State. Very impressive, though, that they, you know.
6.5 is the line, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I just think that Ducks offense is going to be too hard. Marcus Mariota. I don't know why I'm having a hard time saying it. Must be age.
I kind of feel like Ohio State might win, Rob.
I was kind of feeling that way, too. I don't know. They've impressed me every step of the way, I have to say. I mean, and Urban Meyer is a brilliant coach. You know, what everyone wants to say about him.
Herb.
Yeah. That.
We got two clones over there, Tom Herman and Chris Ash.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Good point.
Man, I know.
I don't know. I like Oregon.
I've known Chris Ash since the McCarney years. That's how long he's been like associated with Iowa State loosely.
I've known Rob Ash since I first got
into this business. We used to, you know, like our recruiting parties that we mm-hmm. throw, and we're throwing our football one. We just got it locked in February 11th, so about a month from now. But Chris Ash was like the guy who would always come, like for the McCarney staff. Back in the day. So, like, I got the cool dude. And then Tom Herman, of course.
Yeah. Mensa man.
Everybody loves Tom Herman. If you've ever met Tom Herman, you love Tom Herman. But he – I'd like to see those guys win. I don't really have a dog in the fight. I could not care less who wins this football game.
Yeah.
But I kind of – I don't know why. I just – you know, we keep counting Ohio State out.
Yep.
And then they freaking just – routed or not, they blitzed Bama with a third string quarterback.
Yeah.
I just think that Oregon's been so close a couple
times. No, I know, you're right.
It's just time for them to finally get over the hump and finally get that national championship.
And that third string quarterback deal. I mean, how many games like that can he string together? I mean, he did just enough things.
No, you're right.
To help them and I mean,
isn't it annoying though, like, cuz I think we all can agree that the Big Ten sucks. Even Jared, a Nebraska fan. Yeah. Top two. It's just not a very they've got some good teams. Michigan State's a good team.
I wouldn't say sucks, but yeah, it's not.
I think they're better than everybody gave them credit for.
I agree with that. But those teams like
Northwestern,
four down, are terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. Illinois.
I mean, Iowa State was awful.
Yeah.
And walked into Kinnick and beat Iowa.
Yeah.
Who won seven games.
Arguably, by the end of the season, Iowa was pretty terrible too, so.
That was in week three.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I know what you mean. The Big Ten was definitely not very good.
No, but like, what annoys me, though, is Ohio State is not like your prototypical Big Ten team.
No, no.
Yeah. You know, those dudes are – that does not look like a – that looks like a – that's a championship-type team.
Mm-hmm.
If they have Braxton Miller.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, as a Nebraska fan at this point, I'm thinking their window of being able to win a Big Ten championship might have closed. With Harbaugh coming in at Michigan, the way Urban Meyer's done it at Ohio State, it might be done for the Huskers. I'm sad to admit it, but
you know what?
It's just another level for those two programs.
I get what you're saying. I still feel like at the right formula at Nebraska, you could win.
Yeah.
But the problem with the Nebraska job, and I've talked about it a lot, is guys like you.
Yeah.
You guys think you should be winning national titles.
What? When have I ever told you that you should be winning a national championship?
But you know how it is over there, though.
Yeah, I know. I'm not a crazy one. I promise you guys
no,
that.
No, I know.
At this point, now I'm kind of a closeted Husker fan.
But I still think a Big Ten title for Nebraska is in reach.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, do I want them to win one? Of course. Do I want them to win a national championship? Of course. But realistically, do I think that it's going to happen in the next couple of years?
Who's in your division?
Well, Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Illinois, Northwestern. I think that might be it.
So who of those teams, Wisconsin's your big hurdle.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Wisconsin.
But other than that, I mean, Pat Fitzgerald's fallen off the face of the planet Northwestern. See, and that's when I critique the Big Ten, the schools like that used to be could jump up like Purdue, you know,
yeah.
Like could jump up and they're all terrible now.
Yep. Yeah.
Like Indiana, they beat Missouri, I know, but they're still not very good. You know what I mean? Like there's a bunch of Iowa State-ish schools in there. Like Illinois, you know what I mean?
Yeah, Rutgers, Illinois, Maryland's football program is not very good.
Maryland's all right, but they're not. Minnesota's all right.
Yeah.
But that's all I can say about a lot of these schools.
Mm-hmm.
They're all right. Mm-hmm. They've got a bunch of. Trying to think of a school in the Big 12 that I would throw into that mix.
Texas Tech this year, they were okay.
Yeah.
I can't think of a great comparison because I think West Virginia is better than.
Yeah, so do I. I mean, Texas Tech wasn't very good, but I think they're better than Illinois, who went to a bowl.
Yeah.
It's just it's really hard to do the league thing.
Yeah.
It maddens me when I hear
it's a different kind of football.
Well, it's different kind of football. You're right. And the four non-conference is just a totally different world. Like, if they're playing nine, I mean, that takes probably two of those Big Ten teams out of bowl games.
Well, they will be soon.
Yeah, that's coming up in, what, 18? 17?
I thought that was 16. I think it might be 16.
Okay.
But yeah.
Good. And that's my whole deal with this playoff thing and everything when it comes to comparing these leagues. Do I know that the SEC is better than the Big Ten? No, I do not know that. And I think you can – I think it's very – it's human nature that we all read too much into bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's – dude, that's weird. Like, a month off, college kids. Like, there's a lot of variables there. But – But what I've always wanted to see, and this will help the playoff committee a lot, is when we're all across the country playing the same amount of non-conference games compared to, you know, the FCS stuff. Get that on an even playing field.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be much easier to judge.
Yeah. I mean, people that judge the bowl games, I mean, it's funny. I think they pick and choose. It's a la carte. Because if you judge it this year and you're a Big 12 fan.
Oh, yeah. It's atrocious.
Big 12 is a lousy conference. They can't
Big
go
Ten
and
had
beat
a,
anybody. Oklahoma goes and gets embarrassed.
Big Ten had a nice year, but look at the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Like, do you just ignore that? Like, there's a lot of anomalies, and you know what I mean, in bowl season.
There have been seasons, in recent seasons, where the Big Ten was better top to bottom than this year, for sure.
Absolutely.
They went into bowl games and got crushed. I mean, that's why putting too much stock in that, I mean, frankly – to be quite honest, I don't give a rat's ass. Oh, did I just say
no, you
that?
Can say ass. say ass all you want.
Whose conference is better than the other? This is a pet peeve of mine.
Matter.
Really quick, I'll close up.
No, that's fine.
I don't care one bit. Maybe, again, that's age. That's my excuse when I have stuff. But because I did care when I was younger. But I care how the team I'm rooting for is doing.
Yeah.
I don't really care if the team that beat the team I'm rooting for does well in their bowl game. I don't really care if somebody says, oh, the conference my team plays in is great. If my team goes and wins, that's all that matters to me.
Shouldn't, in today's day and age too, with the playoff, why do conferences even matter?
Just win, baby.
Well, because my point is, like, so by the definition of what they're doing, I mean, it's pretty cut and clear. They're trying to get the four best teams, right?
Yeah.
So shouldn't we all just put a blindfold on when it comes to the conference and just look at resumes?
Yep.
Just straight resumes. All 12 games equal. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if a Big 12 team plays nine conference games, that should help them.
Yeah.
If anything. Yeah. That should help them, which maddened me about the whole, well, Baylor only – their non-conference was a joke.
Yeah,
it was a joke, but they also have one fewer non-conference game, you know, so that they should get some credit for that as well. Like, an Oklahoma should get credit because they schedule up
yep.
yeah.
every single year. I'm trying to think of a Big Ten team out of fairness who's Iowa. They went to Pitt.
Yeah.
Give them some credit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there's
Nebraska goes to Miami next year.
There you go. Nebraska scheduled Miami. That's another good point.
They've got Oregon in 2 years. So
you're starting to see it, and yeah. It's hard to. It's easy for us all to just jump off a cliff after year one, because we don't really. But this thing's I think when the Big Ten starts playing nine, I think
the SEC is going to be forced to do it at some point.
Pac-12 is going to start playing nine too, I believe.
I thought they already
maybe
did.
Yeah, they already are. Did. You're right. Yeah. It's the Pac-12.
They were the first ones.
And the ACC as well. So I think when all this stuff starts to equal out, it'll be a lot better for everybody.
Yeah, the conference talk won't be as – I don't know why it. I don't know why it kind of chafes me a little bit. But
you know
just
why,
like people
Rob?
Get so upset about the Big 12 struggling. Well,
it's because you live in Iowa.
Yeah.
No, it really is. I mean, it's – this Iowa State-Iowa thing, oh, my God.
Yeah.
It just
– it's a battle.
Well, it's nonstop.
And it never ends.
Because, like, you know
– it's like Yankees.
It never – you're right. It doesn't matter. Once the game's over, well, then, you know
– shout out to my boy Ted Flint. He's always out there.
Oh, yeah.
He's the foot soldier out there.
There you go.
Putting in the dirty work for us.
See, and that's the thing. Like, when the games are over, well, it's still – okay, now it's Big 12 versus Big 10, and one side represents – you know?
Yeah.
Like, it just – I get it. Whatever. I love passion. I love passion, but I don't like stupidity sometimes.
To make a long conversation short, go Ducks tonight. That's how it's going to go.
All right. I'm impressed Jared wore his Oregon T-shirt.
Yeah. I was ready to go.
No, that's a good job out of you, man. Rob, you're picking Oregon too?
Yeah, I'm picking Oregon. I think Ohio State can hang in there. They do have, you know, those elite caliber athletes pretty much everywhere, but I just think Oregon finds a way.
Okay. Good. For the sake of conversation, I'll take Ohio State and the underdog. I'm going to vouch for my guy Tom Herman.
Okay.
Who just poached Yancey McKnight and Paul Rhodes.
Yes, he did. But of course, they have a long history, though.
Yeah, they do. Bloom and I will talk about that tonight on – well, it'll be up on the site Tuesday morning, the Mr. B Clothing podcast. Thanks, guys. It's fun. Yeah, we all got to get up to Ames.
Yep.
See what Fred Hoiberg has to say about the Baylor Bears. Bill Finley. Well, Iowa State wrestling talk as well. They beat Penn over the weekend.
Yep.
Is Penn any good, Rob? Like, what's their deal?
Sometimes they are. They usually have a guy or two. They're not good. But Iowa State, that was a
– they have some big ones coming up, though, don't they?
It was a very nice one. Yes. They'll get into conference play shortly. I mean, speaking of conferences, obviously in the wrestling world, there's, you know, a few teams.
Does the Big 12 even exist in wrestling anymore?
Oklahoma State, Iowa State. There's somebody that kind of gets thrown in there.
Cornell. I'm just thinking of all the wrestling.
They're Ivy. Well, it's a topic.
Northern
for
Iowa.
Day.
Northern Iowa in the Big 12. Didn't
no,
they like, try
some,
to get in the Big 12?
They're in some West Conference. West
okay, whatever.
Coast guy. Yeah,
who
whatever.
Knows?
Thanks, guys.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you.
Iowa Clinic Men's Center, iamenscenter.com. We'll be back next Monday morning with your weekend recap. So long, everybody. For Jared, for Rob, I'm Chris. Take care. Have a good Monday.